This is the Marketing Development Podcast, brought to you by the Marketing Development Academy, the online community designed to help you develop your marketing business, skills, and career by exploring the world of marketing and entrepreneurship. Here is your host, Pete Everett.
Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. My name is Pete Everett, and today I am joined by the wonderful and very lovely Helen Pollock, and we talk about her journey through entrepreneurship. We talk a lot about her previous life, actually, and where her journey began and how she became to become the content doc. And then we start to talk about how you keep content real, and she has some real practical advice. So I'm not going to say any more, and let's dive straight in. Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. And today I am joined by a lady that's had quite a journey to get to Royal Leamington Spa, Helen Pollock. Helen, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks, Pete. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you on the show. And for full disclosure, that was the third take of that intro because I did call you by somebody else's surname the first time around. Helen, do you, other than living in the delightful Royal Leamington Spa, do you want to let us all know a little bit about yourself and who you are and what you do?
Sure, yes. So I am the content doc. I'm a non-fiction ghostwriter and book coach, and I also write business content for entrepreneurs, and I also teach them how to do it themselves if they want to. So yeah.
So you've really got kind of a sort of varied different levels of service that people can work with you on, depending on how they want to do their own content, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right. Some people just don't have the time, or they don't have the confidence in their writing ability to do their own stuff, and others, would like to, but just need a bit of help and support. So yeah, there are those two different levels of service.
Brilliant. Fantastic. So I know from the sort of little pre-chat that we've had that you didn't start doing this. You're a lady from Leeds that has sort of had a global journey to get to Leamington Spa, and you started off your sort of entrepreneurial journey by trying to teach Mandarin to Chinese children. So do you want to just sort of take us on a little bit of that journey and how your sort of entrepreneurial thoughts and how your business has evolved, I suppose, is really the question I'm asking.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it all started off, I'd wanted to work for myself for donkey's years. And as early as the early noughties, I was telling friends that I wanted to have a portfolio lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And by that, I meant, doing a bit of this and a bit of that and a bit of something else, because I'm someone who gets bored easily. And, for me, variety is very much the spice. So working in a corporate job, I often just found really boring. So the impetus for real change came when I had my daughter. Mm-hmm. And she's now 8, and I didn't want to go back to my corporate job, not at all. I would have had to have gone back full time, and that just wasn't an option for me. So during my year's maternity leave, I was working out what I could do. So my degree was French and Italian. And I also speak some other languages.
All right, there's no need to brag.
But the reason for that, I think, is that we lived in Dubai when I was a child for 5 years. So there's for neurological reasons, there's a neurological pathway that's open in your brain with regard to learning languages. It's open because you're learning your mother tongue up until the age of between 10 and 12.
Right.
When it closes. So if you start learning a second language before the age of 10, it keeps that pathway open in your brain for the rest of your life.
Wow. I never knew that.
Yeah. So what that means is that for the rest of your life, you'll find it easier to pick up foreign languages.
You see, that's really interesting. So my wife's from, well, former Yugoslavia. Mm. And we were just talking earlier. So her mum was Hungarian and her dad was Serb. And she grew up with two languages in her family. And yeah. She then learned some others at school, you know, like we learn French and German here in the UK. They learned Italian and something else, English and Italian, yeah. Were the two that they had. And she's always been able to pick, you know, to pick those things up. And with Serbian having a sort of Cyrillic element to it as well, you know, she can make out words in Russian and things like that too. Mm. So she, you know, and sort of fast forward 20 odd years to when I met her. And my only experience of foreign languages, I was a child of the 80s in the UK, so we didn't do any foreign languages till we were 11 and went to secondary school. And I yeah. only just scraped through my exams in my foreign languages at secondary school. And I really, really struggle to pick up any Hungarian to speak to my mother-in-law. I can do, you know, I can do the odd bits. I can ask, how are you? And that, but the problem I have is that I can ask the question, but I can't understand the answer.
Yes.
So, and it's been a constant battle. So it's really interesting to find out that there is actually a neurological reason as to why I could struggle with that.
Absolutely. And that's why in the last few years, it's become compulsory for schools to start teaching foreign languages at primary school in the UK.
Right. Yeah.
To take advantage of that neural pathway. And that's why, people say, oh, I don't, you know, oh, wow, you must be so clever. It's, you know, I find languages so hard. But it's not your fault. If you only started learning at secondary school, then you've probably missed the boat with that neural pathway.
You know,
and it will, there we are. But, and also Hungarian is, I mean, I would have no idea because it's completely different, isn't it? It's Hungarian and Finnish and Basque.
That's basically it, yeah. It's one of those languages that you start with the base word, and then by the time you've put tense and gender and context onto said word, you end up with a completely different word. It isn't the most straightforward of things, and we get by, and we have a nice little routine when we're out there that, you know, I'll nod and smile for most of the day, and then my wife and I'll sit down with a glass of wine at night, and she'll tell me everything that people have been talking about. So she's not having to work like a 24-hour translator when we're there. So, you know, we get around it. It's not a problem. It almost feels like this should be the learning language podcast with Pete.
It does. Doesn't it? So I was supposed to be telling you. So I, during that year's maternity leave, I did some primary school, after school French club teaching.
Okay.
And at the same time, I kept hearing on the radio and, you know, in the news, we don't have enough Mandarin Chinese speakers. It's holding the UK economy back, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't see, so knowing that primary school was the time to start learning languages, and particularly those that are perceived as hard.
Yep.
Because young children don't see things in that way.
Yep, that's true. And Mandarin has, I can't give the number, but I know the Mandarin alphabet is like massive. And then they also have symbols for words as well, don't they? So it's not structured the same way that we do in the Western kind of languages, or even the Latin-based languages.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely different, but also in some ways it's easier than you might think. So I looked into it, and nobody really seemed to be teaching Mandarin in a fun and lively way to primary school children in my area. Mm-hmm. There was a company in London, but I did some research. They didn't have a great reputation. There were some heritage learner Chinese schools in most cities, and there was one in Coventry. But they had a reputation for being... They were aimed at kids with Chinese heritage, and they had a reputation for being deadly dull in their teaching style, and not remotely aimed at the average British child. Mm-hmm. So anyway, what I did, so I thought, right, well, there's a gap in the market here.
So there's a gap in the market. All I have to do is learn Mandarin.
So I should say I had some very basic Mandarin, and I did have an understanding of Chinese culture because my parents lived in Singapore for 7 years. Mm-hmm. But I didn't, I mean, I can teach a primary school after school club for like a term and that's it. So I employed teachers who, you know, who were fluent in Mandarin to teach the lessons, and I worked with a proper Mandarin teacher to come up with the curriculum. I also had a PR job alongside that, 3 days a week, and I worked at Little Dragons for 5 years, mostly alongside a part-time PR job. But
that is also such a cool name for it, I've got to say. Little Dragons, that
thank
does sound
you,
you know. Yeah, I get that. Even kids get that. That's brilliant. I love that name. Anyway.
And we also had, like, my friend did us a brilliant logo as well. It was just perfect. So, but anyway, I tweaked that blinking business model every which way over the course of 5 years. So, my initial aim was primary school, after school, club, Mandarin. Barrier was Mandarin. Good Mandarin teachers are really hard to find, and they charge more than the average sort of French or Spanish teacher because they know that.
Yep.
Which meant that the lessons were more expensive.
Yep.
And parents weren't necessarily willing to pay. And I also started having requests from secondary schools wanting us to teach within curriculum time.
Right.
So effectively, our teaching became mostly secondary and private primary schools.
Okay.
Within the school day. Mm-hmm. But I've found it difficult to retain teachers because, we could only offer them a few hours a week in any particular area. Geographically.
Yeah.
So then they would often go off and get a full-time teaching job, understandably. So then I took it online. I worked with a brilliant Mandarin teacher to create these online sort of video lessons with worksheets alongside and all sorts. But again, just couldn't get the numbers that we needed. So and then in 2017, a few things happened that just made me think, God, I'm so tired of this. You know, we're breaking even, but that's about it. I've just come to the end of my energy for this. I've tried everything I can. The meat isn't there in this sandwich.
That's a good way of putting it. And at least you were able to be honest with yourself about that. And it obviously, because you now are the content doc, as you say, so it obviously didn't sort of quash your entrepreneurial spirit, or you didn't admit defeat and go straight back into a corporate job, because that would be the easy thing to do, but you've then pivoted again.
Yeah, hell no. Do you know what? I guess some people might see those 5 years as being a failure, but I don't at all, because I learned so much about business. You know, I've been a career marketer, mostly sort of PR person, but I'd worked in every area of the marketing mix, really. But actually, when it comes to marketing your own business, totally different kettle of fish. And just running your own business, there's so much to learn.
Yeah.
And then the other aspect is we taught thousands of children Mandarin Chinese over 5 years.
Mm.
So there are, you know, my hope is that of those thousands, you know, many of them will have a fondness, at least for kind of Chinese language and culture. And some of them will have continued on.
Yeah.
And they will, you know, be able to help the UK economically speaking, and also will have found a person, you know, will find a personal satisfaction and enjoyment from having learnt Mandarin.
Yeah.
So there is so much to be grateful for from that experience.
That's brilliant, and it's really great that you can look back on it that way. And you're dead right. Just because something doesn't work doesn't mean that the entire thing has been a failure, and there's always positives to be taken out. And yeah, you're right. There'll be, you know, so you reach thousands of children, and that could mean that there's still hundreds of children that, I don't know, they may be working now in China somewhere off the basis of that. Those lessons that you had, all because you had this vision. Actually, I suppose if it was only 5 years ago, they're probably not old enough yet, are they? Thinking about it.
Some of them might be.
They may go on to, you know. Anyway, you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, certainly some of them could be like studying Mandarin at university now.
There you go.
Some of those kids. So, yeah.
There you go. That's brilliant. So where did the content doc then sort of picked up? I suppose it went back to English, but it picked up some of the aspects of your corporate job, and then some of the things that you'd learned through running your language school.
Yeah, so I sort of drew Little Dragons to a close at the end of 2017. I'd already been doing some kind of writing for other people as a freelancer prior to that, and so then I launched my own sort of marketing and PR agency, and within it was amazing, the instant relief. It just felt so right.
You know, so we run content plans for clients in our agency, and we do a lot of writing for them, and you get some clients that have really interesting things to talk about. And I did notice from the so I should just mention that when people ask to come on the podcast, we have a form that you fill in. One of those things is just give us a bit of background, and you mentioned that you'd written for people like Aston Martin, for example. And I'm a massive petrol head, so for me that would be like the holy grail. You know, I could wax lyrical about it all day, every day, never get bored. And then you get a client that comes along that sells light bulbs, and all of a sudden you've got to find a passion for something that seems ultimately boring or mundane or everyday, and you've got to try and make that interesting. So, you know, how do you draw your inspiration? Because surely the whole point of being a content writer, a content writer, or a ghostwriter in particular, is that you sort of mimic the passion that the person that you know is publicizing this thing has for their product. How do you deal with that?
Well, I think the content doc, I should say, I've specialized as the content doc only really this year because I wanted to write. Specialize in writing content and helping people with their written content, and not the rest of the marketing mix. Although you always have to take a slightly holistic approach when you're working with, you know, entrepreneurs and very small business people.
Yes,
but anyway, with that said, I think at least part of that is kind of who you are. So I'm someone who is just generally, I have a thirst for knowledge. I'm genuinely interested in most things, which sounds really weird, but it is true. And the other thing is, I think just with experience, so, you know, I can review and research a topic and find an angle, because, you know, ultimately what we're doing is we're telling stories, we're telling business stories, and we approach it in the same way that a journalist would, although perhaps with slightly duller subject matter at times.
It can be. Look, and don't get me wrong, I've not got anything against, but lots of people have made lots of money off light bulbs. So I've not got anything against them. All I'm saying is that as an agency, certain topics can be more challenging than others. There's my disclaimer put out.
Yeah, do you know what? So I've recently written a couple of features. One was about hot water cylinders, 1,000 words.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And another one was another 1,000-worder was about air tightness.
Air tightness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
So
that sounds gripping.
I know, but I did it. I did it, and it's no worries. The thing is. And the place I always start with my clients, if I'm coaching them, and also if I'm taking a brief myself, because I'm writing something, it's, you know, tell me about your customer, what your audience, what are your audience's pain points? Because that's where you start. And I was talking to the fabulous Bob Gentle the other day.
Oh, you've got to love Bob.
Gotta love the Bob. Oh yes,
he's going in the notes as a shout out. There we go.
He's gotta do that. But I was saying to him, the way I approach creating content and teaching other people to create written content is, you start off by effectively getting some lenses sorted. And by that, I mean things like, you know, what are your audience's pain points? What are the outcomes that you know of the product or service you're providing that is going to meet these people's needs? Mm-hmm. And that's like, you know, those things, sorts of things are lenses that we have to look through before we can focus properly on creating relevant content. So that's what, you know, I would always start, because it's so easy, and you see it time and time again with clients. They focus on the features of their product or service. They don't focus on the outcome to their customers, and you know, the two can be very far apart.
They can. And there's, so I used to, before I set up this company, I used to work in an e-commerce agency. And when you're dealing with a lot of products, lots of people that sell products talk about features and benefits. Mm. And it gets said so quickly that they get lumped together as the same thing.
Yeah.
Whereas actually they are very different, very distinct. And if you can hold them in the right balance, they can turbocharge your reach. My job at the e-commerce agency was to look after the digital marketing and SEO teams, and we would focus on getting those, just picking out those features and benefits and getting them in the right way, the right sort of balance to then filter through into the rest of the marketing message, and then the different digital marketing techniques and whatever that we were using. But that's where we would start. But it has become, as I say, you know, you talk to people and they just say, oh, we need a feature and benefit section. And it would be essentially a list of half a dozen bullet points, and that would be it. Mm. And you'd think, no, that's the thread there. We talk about finding a golden thread. I don't know whether that's a term you use, finding a golden thread. And I tell you what, they were always found in those bullet points.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think everyone is kind of walking around thinking, well, what's in it for me?
Well, yeah, they are. You're dead right.
Yeah, that's what I always say to clients. But yeah, it's fine. I also talk about finding that thread. And you're right. It probably is in there, but it's the way that you present that.
Yes. And So this then leads on to another sort of part of this, I suppose, which is you've already mentioned that what we're really doing here is telling stories, and that there's a key there's a key part to this about understanding that storytelling process, because just because you write an article about something on a day about hot water cylinders doesn't mean that the customer that you want to target is in the right frame of mind, or even at that moment in time has the need for your hot water cylinder. So just because you retell parts of your story doesn't mean that you're being repetitive, but you do need to be able to do it in an interesting way that maybe has, I don't know, a different take or comes from a different standpoint or whatever, to keep it fresh and keep it interesting. So how do you go about approaching that?
Well, I think there's a few things here, and I think the most important aspect here is about repurposing content, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because by the same token, we can't be busting our, you know, asses effectively, creating brand new content ad infinitum. Mm-hmm. So every time I create content, or, you know, and I tell my clients this too, you need to be looking at how, before you even put pen to paper or you know, probably finger to laptop these days, you need to be thinking about how you're going to use that content. So I like to use videos, which is perhaps surprising, because I'm all about writing in many ways, but actually I've found short videos on LinkedIn have been really useful to me. Mm-hmm. And I've got, you know, good traction. So for example, you know, if I'm going to I might write an article about a problem that my target audience suffers from, and that might be something like it might be something like structuring content, like, you know, we're talking about now, because actually an awful lot of my work is about helping people to come up with the right structure for their content. But anyway, moving on. So I might write a long form article and put that on LinkedIn, because LinkedIn is my primary social media channel. And then I'll probably also put that on my my blog on my website. I'll create a short, you know, maybe 3-minute video about that article and point people to that, or perhaps to a lead magnet that I've created off the back of that. And at the same time, I'll also put that video on my Content Doc Facebook page. I've created a YouTube channel, which is a kind of sleeper thing, where, you know, I just put it on there. And I think, you know, apparently YouTube's the biggest search engine after Google now.
Apparently so. That's what they tell us. But then it's Google telling us, and they own both. So
they do. It's win-win for them, isn't it? But hopefully it'll be win-win for us too. But we'll see. And then, you know, I'd also be looking at, okay, so if I've got a long-form article here, and I might have made an abridged version for my blog, which might be then, you know, 5 ways to tackle X. So I think, like, today I'm probably going to record a little video about overcoming writer's block. And so I've created a blog post, and it's like 4 ways to tackle, you know, how I can overcome writer's block or whatever. 4 different ways, whatever it is. I haven't quite decided on the title yet.
I won't quiz you on them, don't worry.
No. But then I will also put out on social media, you know, 4 different posts with each one of those points, and, you know, pointing people to where I want them to go, wherever, you know, wherever it might be, the blog post or the lead magnet, depending. But you always you just want to be squeezing the juice, don't you? You want to squeeze every last drop out of every piece of content you create.
Well, that's, you're dead right. And I've got to say, this is something I struggle with the podcast. So this podcast that you are listening to, guys, is my most regular form of content. And, you know, by the time we've recorded it and we've edited it and we've sorted the artwork out, we've done the show notes, and then we've put it online and we've done some social media posts on the day of launch and that kind of thing, I'm already on to the next podcast, because that process does take a number of days. And I'm aware that I could do so much more with repurposing my content.
Yeah.
I have had Amy Woods on the podcast twice. She is brilliant. I've met her a number of times as well. And she's recently launched a book. So it's currently the 20th of December, the date recording this. And her book came out about a month ago. And that really is kind of a sort of user manual it's kind of like a reference manual, actually. So it's not the sort of book that you would read from cover to cover, but if you want to know about repurposing video, then there's a section about that, and it talks you through the different possibilities you've got of repurposing video and some of the tools that can be used, et cetera, et cetera. It's a really good thing. So I'll drop that in the show notes as well.
Brilliant. Yeah, that sounds absolutely perfect.
It is a really great resource. But I know that I'm not getting all of that. It's one of those things, you've invested so much time in something that actually, if you could put in that extra 10%, that's all you really need, you could then squeeze that extra bit of juice out of it. And it's something I struggle with, just simply because I run out of time.
I know, it's tricky, isn't it? But then, you know, I guess we're hoping to get to a point where we can then maybe outsource some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But it's the in-between time, isn't it? When you're not quite, and it's also a bit of a vicious circle, because maybe if you could outsource it now, then, you know, your reach would be that much greater, and it would be a virtuous circle. So,
yes, that is, you know, you're scratching an itch that I have by saying that, let me put it that way. So, is that something that you then deliver for your clients as well, or is that something that you're just doing for yourself?
I mean, that's something that I do for myself mostly. I would mostly coach people to do that.
Mm-hmm.
If they wanted help with the writing of stuff, then, you know, I can do that. But I'm no video expert, for example, and it literally took me two. I decided, like, in summertime that I needed to start putting out our own content. And I was just frankly scared, and it took me 2 months to build up the courage to actually create a video and put it up on LinkedIn, of all things. It's, you know, do you know what I mean? It's not like it was on, I don't know, Snapchat or even Instagram. I was unlikely to be trolled badly on LinkedIn, but absolutely cacking it. And also, do you know what? Even though people had told me, because I'm an extrovert. I'm like, you know, I love a chat. I'm quite a, I don't know, dynamic, high energy person. Jeez, video sucks all your personality out. And I have been told this, but oh my God.
You know, there's something about that. So I think I'd love to know if you agree with this. So the reason that I started the podcast was that 2 years ago, in fact, it was, I decided that I needed to start generating content. So I was going to write a blog. And I decided that the problem with a blog is that if you don't have like a groundswell of content to begin with, it looks a bit rubbish. So I decided that I was going to do the 12 blogs of Christmas. And if you go to my website, peteeverett.com, you'll still see that numbers 1 to 8 are still there. I forgot a key fact, which is that I don't really like blogging. So I got to like 1 to 4 happened, you know, I had the passion for it, the vigor for it, all that kind of stuff. And it was fine. Then I started to get bored, and like 5 and 6 were more difficult, and 7 and 8 were a bit like pulling teeth.
Yeah. And we didn't quite get to 12 at all, did we?
No, we didn't get to 12 at all. And I think if you check the dates, number 8 came out about 15 days after Christmas. So it wasn't even like 8 on 8 days. The schedule didn't even stick. So it didn't work. So that's when I went back to the drawing board and thought, you know what? I talk quite a lot in my job. I have a lot of meetings with people. So I feel like I'm quite good at portraying things verbally. So why not start a podcast? And I had some friends that were running podcasts, and they sort of helped me out with the technology and the process and all that kind of thing. And 2 years later, look, here we are. This is going to be this episode's in the 80s. We've hammered on through. Brilliant. So the thing with that is, I found to begin with, if you're not doing this, you can start by finding a medium that you feel more comfortable with, because that's a great way to start. And ultimately, we've all got to start somewhere. But yeah. As you're discussing with video, is that once you're then into the rhythm of creating that content the way that you like doing it, is then to start pushing the boundaries into some of the things that make you feel a bit, ooh, this is a bit different.
Yeah.
And I guess for you, that's video on LinkedIn. I'm not massively keen to doing the video stuff, if I'm being perfectly honest, but I should really start. I've now got all these episodes. I should really start getting those properly transcribed, or picking up themes and creating written content out of them and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not doing that either.
Absolutely.
So I know I've sort of rambled on a bit there about how I started, but you know, do you agree with that kind of approach, or would you take it differently? How do you explain it to your clients?
Yeah, I mean, so I firmly believe that you need to do one thing well. Start off concentrating on one thing that you're pretty sure is going to, because you've done your research, is going to have an impact with your target audience, and hopefully it's something that you enjoy as well. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, go for it. Once you've nailed that, then you can add other things. So, you know, I started literally, it was, you know, videos on LinkedIn, and then I copied those to my Facebook page, and then now I've added in this YouTube channel, and my videos have got much, much better. So much better. There is actual character coming through now.
you've found the right lens that doesn't block the character from going.
Oh my god, yeah. So that's good, and I'm just feeling much more comfortable with it. I've already learned so much, and I feel like, so now I'm kind of moving. There's more personality coming through. I'm expanding a bit into other channels. I've also set up an Instagram profile and started putting stuff on there. But it's fundamentally still my focus is videos on LinkedIn.
And are you finding then that by putting those videos on LinkedIn, you are, that channel of marketing has now started to pick up to actually see notable differences within your own business?
Yes. Absolutely. It's incredible. I mean, I'm gonna give a shout out to John Espirian here. So John Espirian is a technical writer, mm-hmm. but is amazing on LinkedIn and gives so freely of, you know, fabulous advice about about using LinkedIn for your business. So using his free advice, I completely recreated my LinkedIn profile in about June. And just doing that, even before I started putting content out on there, I got like leads.
There you go.
Just from doing that, not even from putting content out. So then when I started putting content out at the beginning of October, I think it was, mm-hmm. I've had, my pipeline's bulging, Pete.
Bulging. There you go. There's the title for this, How to Make Your Pipeline Bulge.
And so, you know, I'm really impressed, and I only started doing this consistently 2 months ago.
So that really is there's two lessons to learn from this. One is that by doing this stuff, yes, you can see results and you can see them relatively quickly.
Yeah.
And secondly, one of the comments I get messaged to me most of all through the group, and I completely understand where people come from because I was there, and it makes me chuckle that they think this of me, to be honest, but is that the message I often get is, it's easy for you to say some of these things because you already have it all set up. And it makes me chuckle because I really don't have it all set up at all. But what this also shows is that you know, just because you start with one doesn't mean that you need to commit to it for the next 18 months and that's all you're going to apply your efforts into and X, Y, Z. But actually, it's start with one until you're comfortable with it. And if that means that within a month you're comfortable with it, great, move on. Happy days. If it takes you a bit longer than that, nobody's judging you. Nobody's watching you. Nobody's saying, oh, well, they're not got a Facebook page yet. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter. You can take it at your own pace.
Absolutely. I think the biggest lesson that, you know, the whole like little dragon story has taught me, and even, you know, latterly, this kind of video marketing that I've done recently, it's just like consistency is key. Just showing up consistently with relevant and engaging content is the key. And you're right, you don't have to stick at this forever. And certainly that's one of the bonuses of working for yourself, is that you have an agility and you can react accordingly to what's working and what's not. But fundamentally, to start with, you are going to have to show up consistently so that you actually know what's working and what's not. And that you know, might not be instant. It might be, you know, 3-6 months before you get a feel for how things are going. But that's what I would say. You know, being consistent is the key to success.
Fantastic. I think that's a brilliant point to end on. So thank you, Helen, for your time. If people want to reach out with you and you know, communicate with you online, what's the best place to find you?
So I should say, I don't feel like I've actually told your audience about structuring content, because there are sort of various steps that I would usually sort of, you know, advise people go through, and I'm happy to share about that. But I've created it's called the Content Structure Buster mini course, and I'm very happy to share that with your listeners for free. So I'll give you a link to that. They can find my website at www.thecontentdoc.com. I am Helen Pollock on LinkedIn, and those are the best places to find me.
Fantastic. There'll be links to all of that in the show notes. And I think what this means is we're going to have a second episode where we talk about how to actually structure content, which was one of the things we're going to talk about. Thank you so much for your time, Helen. It's been a blast having you on, and I look forward to episode number 2.
Me too. My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on the show, Pete.
No worries. Cheers.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Wow, Helen, thank you so much for your time. It was brilliant to talk to you and to get to know you a bit more, and I am so pleased that you have already booked in for episode number 2. So guys, watch out, because in the next few weeks, Helen's going to be back on the show, and we've already got a few things planned that we're going to talk about, but I'm not going to give you the spoiler. If you want to see show notes for this episode, you can find them at peteeverett.com/082, and I will see you next week. But if you want to carry on the conversation, jump into our Facebook group at peteeverett.com/group, and we can have chat around all of these subjects that we've spoken about today and how you can keep your content real. Until next week.